All right, welcome to the Urban Pitch Podcast, the beautiful game of life. Today we have Jeffrey Achampong.
Yeah.
Pretty good on the pronunciation?
That's pretty good. That's
our
pretty
LA Galaxy 2 player currently, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All right, man, let's just keep it casual, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, I didn't mention earlier when you came in, but I realized, dude, you're pretty like swagged out, huh?
Thank you.
You got the style and all that going on?
I try.
You got the shirt, the chains, the earring. You can't see it because, you know?
You can't really see it, but...
Right, you got the earring, and you doing like the we got the Louis Vuitton shoes. What's up? You know what I mean? Like, is USL Pro contracts are like paying a lot better than I thought nowadays? Nah. I don't know what's up with all that.
I'm still milking the Bastia money. But,
The Bastia money. All right, let's get into that then. Okay, so then we'll start with just kind of like how you started with soccer, right? Because you talked about Bastia, right? And that was like just like two teams ago, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but then let's start a little bit before that, right? Where are you originally from then?
So I'm from Ghana, West Africa.
You gotta say that because not everyone will know where Ghana is, right?
Yeah, I gotta make sure they know. It's a population to 22 million now, still growing.
It's huge though.
Yeah, right off the coast. So grew up in Ghana, started playing when I was 7. I moved to Right to Dream, which is like a soccer academy in Ghana when I was when I just turned 10 years old. So I moved away from home when I was pretty young.
So you said the Right to Dream Academy, right?
Yeah.
What is that? Because I looked on that a little bit. That was like really dope and interesting, huh?
Yeah, it's a non-profit organization that basically gives like underprivileged kids the opportunity to realize the dream. And so I mean, I wanted to be a soccer player. I've had teammates who have gone on to be, you know, like going into film, just like basically whatever they want to do. So like I have teammates now, former teammates now who are still in college, trying to like pursue the dream of being directors, doctors, you know, lawyers.
So the Right to Dream isn't just for soccer or football, it is?
So that's how you get scouted as an athlete, as a soccer player. But then, you know, your potential of being, you know, turning out to be whatever you're passionate about, just kind of like, you know.
Follow your passion.
You could literally just follow.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So you got into that academy and then you moved to the U.S. at what age?
When I was 14.
14, okay.
Yeah, I just moved to the U.S. For high school when I was 14.
Okay, and that's when that accent is permanent, right? That's like that's smooth.
I don't even know what I sound like anymore.
Yeah, smooth
honestly.
Though. You don't get comments from the ladies on that accent? They always ask where you're from, though,
right? They always ask me where I'm from.
And then what do you say?
I mean, I tell them I'm from Ghana, but then you're like,
but it's not like it sounds like it's probably because you've been in, like, where you were living in France for a bit.
Yeah, I lived in France for a bit, and I lived in Mexico for a bit. Mexico definitely didn't pick up anything there because
kind of
short.
Okay.
It was too short. But I don't know. I think it's, you know, I speak French now, and a little bit of Spanish, not that great, but I think, you know, it depends where I am and who I'm speaking to. Like, it comes out of me. When I'm speaking to my mom on the phone, I'm talking to my dad, I think I have to like enunciate a little bit more so they understand. But when I'm in the US, if I have like the thick accent, it's hard for people to understand. But I don't know, I think my whole accent now is just kind of a blend between, you know, everywhere I've been and everyone I've lived so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so then you lived in Santa Barbara?
I lived in Santa Barbara. Okay. So my high school was in Carpinteria. It's literally 10,
small,
15 minutes
like a small
away.
School or what?
Small private school.
Private school,
yeah, 220 people. My class was like 75 people. So I went to Kate School in Carpinteria for... from freshman to senior year, 4 years, and then I went to UCS before my freshman year.
So you're living with your family at this time?
No.
You moved here with your family? Or no,
I moved by myself.
Oh, you moved by yourself?
Yeah, I actually moved here with one of my best friends, Abu Danladi. He plays in Minnesota now.
Oh, he does?
So we moved here. It's kind of crazy. We got to the airport with like 20 bucks in our pocket.
That's crazy.
We thought it was like the dope.
So he was from the Right to Dream Academy
as well?
Yeah, so
we both played at Right to Dream.
So then the Right to Dream Academy, they it's a non-profit, it sounds like, and if they scout you based on your talent, right?
Yeah.
And then they give you opportunities.
Yeah.
And then what, they ship you off to America with $20 in your pocket?
No, that's a whole different story.
Because you spent it all, huh?
No, this is what happened,
they gave you $5,000, but you spent it before you left.
So I got a scholarship to go to Kate School in Carpinteria, and he got a scholarship to go to Dunn School.
Okay.
But in my class, there were like 5 guys who came to the U.S. to go study. And there were kids who went to Hotchkiss on the East Coast, Millbrook, Kent. You know, a bunch of schools on the East Coast, and we're the only two coming to the West Coast.
Okay.
So we go to the airport, and our kid, we had everything taken care of. Like, we had, you know, like, you know, guardians who were picking us up at the airport, like, you know, stewardess who were taking us through. But I was hitting, like, pocket money, you know?
Sure, sure.
And from a kid, from Ghana, and I hadn't seen like any currency apart from the city, which is like the currency we have in Ghana. And and every time we saw like foreign money, we would break it down into like how we converted it to how much it is in cities and what we could really like buy or what we could get in Ghana. And so when we're leaving, our head of pastoral care, so like kind of our dorm parent, I write to Dream, gave us like $20, like, hey, have fun, like get whatever snacks you want at the airport, like, good luck. And my boy and I were like, oh, $20? Yeah,
it's a lot of money though, right?
Yeah, like, we get it.
So you spent it on the airport?
The
or
funny
no?
thing is we didn't even spend
you didn't spend it.
We kept it. We kept it all the way till we get to the US. I mean, like, the first thing we did, we get picked out of the airport, we go to Panda Express. Our guide took us to Panda Express. We had like a feast.
This is at the airport still?
No, we left. We had just landed in Santa Barbara.
Landed in Santa Barbara,
and we still had $20 in our pockets, and we like went to like, I think it was like Ross. We like walked and everything was like, we're looking at the price tag, and like, oh, what could we get? And like walking around with $20.
Hey, Ross is the best place to go with $20,
we
though, right?
We were balling. We're like, yes, please.
You stretched that?
Oh, we stretched that.
Okay.
Now, I think it was just the fascinating part about that was like how we didn't touch the money like the entire time. Like this guy was like, buy something at the airport that you want to eat or something.
Yeah, snacks. We're like, nah. That's hilarious. So then you said Panda Express, though. Was that the first time you tried
Panda Express? Panda Express was my first spot. I went with our guardian, Dan David Foley, to go to Panda Express. And I started school the next day. So right after that, we went back, dropped off my bags, and then we had to go get, like, school supplies and just walking around, like, the stores and just checking out laptops and all that stuff. Like, you know, like, I've had nothing before. Like, I didn't have a laptop. I didn't have a phone. Right. I didn't have anything, like, you know, like, I come out of here and this lady's like, what laptop do you need for school? I'm like,
So this is like you're staying with a host family?
Yes, my host family.
Okay. And so you stayed with a host family and your friend stayed with a different host family.
Yeah, so he lives he went to dance school, which is in San Ynez.
Okay.
So his
pretty close by.
Yeah, pretty close by. It's like a 45-minute drive. So his host family was there and my host family. My host family actually lived in San Francisco, so to
So your host family lives in San Francisco?
Yeah.
But you're going to Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. Okay. So Santa Barbara, my high school was a boarding school, so I didn't even leave my host family.
Yeah, you didn't even stay with
them. His school was a day school slash boarding school. So he got to stay home
with
and go to school
family.
With his host family.
Got it.
But the great thing about my host family was I had two of my host brothers that went to the same school as me. They went to Kate, and so I still have my host brother's there.
Okay, so you guys had your little your crew there still, and hung out together and got to but you guys are already speaking English at the time, right?
Yeah.
So you studied English at home.
I write to Dream.
Okay,
and,
so you
so
no problem with that adjustment, right?
No,
just culturally.
It was culturally a little bit of a shock, and it's like,
what was the biggest shocks, like, you know?
I mean, I think to this day it's kind of like for me it's like how I wouldn't say kids because I'm still young, but like
you're 21,
like,
right?
Yeah, I'm 21. People like my age and just how they relate to their parents. It's like how they talk to their parents. And that still is a shock. Like when I like I'll visit friends and stuff and the way they talk to their parents. And I'm like,
that wouldn't fly in Ghana?
Oh, No chance.
No, none of that. No chance.
Yeah,
no,
like If I raise my voice, my mom, my dad, my dad, I wouldn't even think about it. He's like a quiet dude.
Okay.
Like he doesn't talk.
But you're not gonna raise your. Dad's strict, right?
Yeah, my dad is like my dad. Like never hit me or done anything, but like he knew like he had something, you know. And so like you just kind of did your, you know, yes sir.
You just don't cross the line.
You just don't cross the line.
Okay.
But like,
but with your mom, right?
With my mom,
but she's not gonna let you step over the line either.
My mom and my mom is like my best friend, and and like we would joke around and everything. But like I knew when to like when I got that eye, I'm like, all right, that's it, you know. But like,
so Ghana's pretty traditional.
It's pretty traditional, pretty strict.
Okay. So that was one of the biggest things?
That was one of the biggest culture shocks. And I mean, it's still like I'm dealing with it. Like, I get super uncomfortable by that.
Yeah, when
like,
you see
when
people,
I see, like,
the
kids, like,
overly
raise their voice,
casual,
like,
raise their voice to their parents.
Or, like,
kind of
talk back, or, like, get into fights. I'm like, I can never get in a fight with my mom. Like,
that's not going to
happen.
She
will smack me.
Yeah,
like,
she'll whoop you, right?
Yeah, it's not. It's not. So I think culturally is like, it's super different, you know? And I guess that's how, you know, America does it, and that's how, you know, I was raised. So I'm still kind of dealing with that and not entirely accepting that, but like I right now I acknowledge that, you know, I'm just from a different culture, and I'm from a different place. So it's a little easier for me to stomach it, I guess. That's kind of the only way I could put it. But like when I first moved here, it was like, I couldn't, I had to like be out of the place. I couldn't be there and like see that. It really bothered me.
Okay.
But like, now I'm just like,
What about like in terms of like culture, like with fashion and music and all that? Were you already kind of, you know, into like Western culture living back in Ghana, or was that a big culture shock as well?
Not really. My oldest brother. So I have two older brothers and a sister. My oldest brother is like huge hip hop head, and so when I was younger, like I would listen to all like he like play all these records that I would listen to as a kid. He's like walking around, like not really paying attention. But then my brother that I come after is like a like really really into it. He was like he like rap for a time. Like he kind of is a. It's a journeyman, so he's done it all, like, you know, rap for a bit and, you know, done a bunch of stuff. So, like, through him, like, I got myself kind of immersed into, like, the music and the fashion I saw. I saw the baggy jeans phase, I saw the big gold chains, I saw, you know, the new era caps and the huge white tees. I saw that, like, through him. And for me, I mean, because of him, I was able to see all that before I came here, so it wasn't really like a shock. And I like the music, and I like fashion, and I like to look good, and I like to feel good about myself. So like, I mean, like seeing all that before I came here, kind of was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
So what kind of which artists are your kind of, you know, your top five kind of, you know, that you like
right now?
Yeah, like if it's on your playlist, who's on your playlist right now?
You might be shocked by that, but I love Georgia Smith.
Okay.
You know Georgia Smith. She's like a British artist. She's like my number one right now.
Okay.
Like anything she does, I think she has an amazing voice. I listen to J. Cole a lot. I listen to who do I listen to right now? Young Gravy. You probably don't know him.
Young Gravy. Okay. He's up and coming or what?
No, he's been around for a minute. But like
hip hop.
Yeah, hip hop.
Okay.
It's kind of low-key. Young Gravy.
Okay. Where is he from?
I think he's from Tennessee.
Okay.
And he might be white, but the name is kind of a throw-off.
Oh, I see.
Young Gravy.
Looking him up real quick.
Just look up Young Gravy right now. But my teammates is going to give me a lot of stick for that. Because I played a lot in the locker room, and they're like, what the?
Is it Young with Y-O-U-N-G or Y-U?
Y-U-N-G.
So he's a white guy.
Yeah. You see him?
Yeah, I see him. Matt, okay, known as Young Gravy. Okay. From Minnesota.
He's Minnesota.
Yeah, he's from Minnesota.
Shout out to Budan Laddie,
too. Mr. Clean.
Mr. Clean.
Is like his well-known hit, huh?
Yeah.
Let's check him out. Okay.
Yeah, but like, I listen to a lot of British music. So Georgia Smith, Skepta, a whole host. I have a sick playlist I could share later. But
All right. What about like style? Because I feel like... it's not like necessarily hip hop. So like someone were to see you, they wouldn't know you're like African, right? Because you're, you know, like they would just think, you know, you're from here because you blend in pretty well, right? But they will probably think you're like real cutting edge, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like maybe like, I don't know, like maybe like Pharrell, because he's got like an edge of both hip hop, but also creative, you know, not like hardcore hip hop. You know what I mean?
I think I draw inspiration from everywhere.
Yeah.
But like when I see something I like, I'm like, I could do that and pair it with this. Like, I don't necessarily, like, stick to something. Like, I'll wear, like I'm wearing long white socks with, like, dress pants and, you know, like, sneakers and a plain white tee with, like a statement on there or, like, a hat. But
letting them know what the LA Galaxy is.
You know, just throw something in there. But, I like doing my own thing. I don't really, like, copy and paste. I'll get a shirt from here, put in my closet for like the longest time, like, oh, that would go well with that, and like, I'll
create
put it
your
on
own
later.
Style,
I just do my own thing, but like, like kind of simple, accessorized, but like not overly, like overly,
you know. It's
it.
Kind of interesting to say that, because I don't think, like, especially in the U.S. Soccer players are known for being like all that fashionable, you know what I mean? Now I think this more important, like, you're in Europe, right? They've always been
huge.
It's big, right? Especially like in, you know, France, you know, right? But it's like in Italy, right? But like in the U.S., like soccer players, pro soccer players are not known for being fashionable, right? Like NBA, they always show them, right? Like, you know, D-Wade and, you know, they're always wearing like certain clothes and they're always trying to look for it. But MLS especially, or like pro, they don't really, they're not known for fashion, right?
I think part of it's also the budget.
Okay.
Like LeBron could go out and buy a Goyard bag for $60,000.
Yeah,
you know?
But then, you know, it's like that is part of it, right? But if you're really into like fashion, you don't necessarily
need
money, right?
Yeah.
But then you were saying earlier you dropped some of that Bastia money still, right?
Yeah, but okay, so this is it. Yeah, I would tell you this shirt is from Forever 21. Yeah.
Okay.
Like a cheap shirt for like $19.
Yeah.
But like
you know how to pair it together.
I know how to put it together. So like I wear a sick shirt that goes well with my pants, and like I'll spend like a little bit more on my shoes.
Yeah.
But like when I'm wearing the ensemble, you when you see me, you're gonna
it looks dope.
That fit. Yeah.
Okay. So you put the money on the shoes.
Yeah, but it's
and
not.
And then the jewelry, huh?
Yeah, it really is not all about the tag on whatever it is though. Like one of my, like when I first moved to Bastia, my teammates, some of my teammates were like
dropping huge money,
like,
huh?
Huge money on like Philip Plein. I don't know if you like that designer. And for me, I could never wear anything Philip Plein. Yeah, like I'm not like trying to like mess up. Like if Philip Plein wants to sponsor me, like whatever. But
we'll take it.
Right? We'll take it. But like, maybe I could offer like some input. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But what I think, it's like it reaches the point where people just put stuff together just cause. It's
just
expensive.
Just the label. But you're saying that's not your style.
Not necessarily isn't it. Like I have like some shirts that overly like throws out like maybe like a Givenchy or you know a Versace or like it's bold. But like if I'm wearing like a white Givenchy shirt with like you know a black Givenchy label on it.
Okay.
Like I'm not gonna throw on like a
18 more labels on top of it. You're saying
Jeans with it and like it. Vans that, but just it has to work. Like I'm not trying to just
all just
and,
do labels.
No, and and it's necessarily not like it doesn't have to do with a label. Like is it comfortable? Does it look good? Period. Like it has nothing to do with you wearing like the name brands for the sake of it. And so to my point is, when I first moved, like everyone had Philip Plein stuff, and Philip Plein is like super
in France,
it's super colorful. Yeah. It's like over the top. It's like.
Because they want them to know
splash,
it right away. As soon as they see it, that they're wearing it, right?
Exactly. It's like super out there. Now, I never found that at all appealing.
Okay, but so like, okay, so that was not even that long ago. 2 years ago?
No. I mean, it still happens. I'm like, I would see
But I'm saying in your experience, right?
Yeah.
Because you were in Bastia, right? Yeah. Playing in League One. That was what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. And so then, so that was right out of college then?
Right out of college.
Okay, so you played at UCSB.
I played at UCLA my freshman year.
Freshman year.
Yeah.
And then you got scouted. How did that all happen from playing in college, right? And then ending up in League One.
It's actually a super cool story. So my boy Abu that I was talking about, Abu Danladi, plays for Minnesota. And before he signed to Minnesota, he was on trial at Chelsea when we were... he was 17, I was 16. So I think my sophomore year, his junior year, he went to Chelsea on trial. You know, he did well. You know, one thing led to another. Another, he didn't want to stay at Chelsea. He came back to school, and you know, he was fine with it. Yeah. And then I think his senior year, he went back on trial in Monaco, and Monaco really wanted him to stay, but he's been dealing with a lot of injuries, and so he couldn't stay. And then he came back into the draft at the end of his senior year, and got drafted by Minnesota, number one or number two. But the same kind of agent that he traveled to Monaco with was the same guy that kind of saw me at UCSB. And so after the season, my freshman year, he suggested I go on trial in Europe, or at least spend that spring quarter in Europe, like training and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And he knew I wanted to play professionally. He knew I wanted to like move on and play, you know, in Europe, or just get playing instead of just hanging around in college. And so I spent 2 weeks in Bastia during the spring quarter, and you know everything like that was planned, and I got to sign there for 3 years, and
you signed a 3-year contract with Bastia.
And the
agent is the one that hooked all that up.
Yeah.
Got the trial, and he's paying for your stay and the travel, flight, everything. Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know.
So then you hooked up with Bastia, right?
So I hooked up with Bastia.
Played for what?
So I played for 2 seasons. The first. So I signed in the spring, the season was almost over. I got a couple of games for the second team, and then I came back for the 15-16. Yeah, and you know, played that season, didn't go too well, we got relegated. And we got relegated.
Before we get into that though, okay. So then, when you were playing in League One though for Bastia, right? That was like 2015-16. Is Zlatan there at that time or no?
No, he had just left PSG.
He had just left PSG. Yeah. Okay, and then Neymar, was he there yet? Wasn't there yet, right?
They had just signed Drexler.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so you missed both, right?
Yeah, I think the game against PSG was Drexler's first game, and I remember just like warming up by him. I was like, this is nuts. Like, you know, 3 months ago I was playing college ball.
Yeah.
And now I'm like one of the biggest signings is just like right here. You know?
So then you signed a 3-year contract. How good was that money though?
It's decent.
Decent?
Yeah.
Good enough to...
Our first contract.
Yeah.
I took care of my mom, took care of my dad. You know, it's comfortable.
That's awesome.
The first year contracts are not that huge, but like, you know, coming from a college where you're making obviously no money.
Yeah, not making anything.
To being able to like send money home every month and take care of your family, it's like, it's huge. And for me, that was one of the reasons why I left college.
Right.
Just to make sure my parents are getting old, my brother mm-hmm. and my family kind of needed the support, and you know, my oldest brother was the only one supporting us at that point, and yeah. and being able to contribute was like one of the things that I really wanted to do. And so
I was always curious, so when you sign a contract like in like League One, right, a European yeah. contract, and you sign it with the team, and you said it was a 3-year contract, right?
Yeah.
Do you get like a steady every week paycheck, or you know what I mean? Because you know how they always in the news they talk yeah. about like a week, you know, week pay or week salary, whatever.
Yeah.
So how does it work? Do you get like a paycheck every week, or what, throughout the entire year for 52 weeks? How does it work?
You get a paycheck every month. So
every month. Okay.
At least at Bastia that I yeah. know of, you know. But
you got once a month.
You get once a month.
Okay. For 12 months.
Well, technically for 12 months.
And so, but like during the off season, are you still getting it or no?
Yeah, but also the off season is like literally 2 weeks.
Okay. So yeah, yeah. So then the preseason and all that.
That's
okay.
Right.
Again,
okay.
So throughout the year, you get once a month.
Year, you're
okay.
Good.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So then it was a 3-year, but it wasn't guaranteed. How does that work then?
I mean, technically.
Should have been.
Yeah, it depends what your contract is. And okay. my situation was a little bizarre, especially with Bastia.
Uh-huh.
It's not. We just didn't get relegated, and that was it. We got relegated, and because we didn't have money,
yeah.
We got relegated because there was no money to stay
in
up,
the club.
In the club to stay
so there
up.
Was so crazy. So it was like some craziness going on behind the scenes.
There was a lot of behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the scenes. Yeah. And you don't want. Yeah. You don't want. Are you like staying away, tiptoeing
no,
around?
No, I just think uh-huh. like. I could write a book about it.
Yeah, it was that crazy. Like, yeah. So then, okay, so yeah. like without getting too much into it, it was like yeah. the club wasn't financially solvent, right?
Yeah.
So whatever the money that was supposed to have, it was gone,
it
right?
Was
and so because
there, yeah.
of that, they got like punished, right? Yeah. By the league,
FA,
right? Yeah. By the FA football, yeah. and then they got relegated, right?
Yeah, to the 7th division.
So then,
yeah.
what happened to all like the players and the staff? You know what I mean? First of all, it must have been shock, right? Because you're playing
yeah.
in League One,
yeah.
and enjoying the life, and you know, training and doing everything, and all yeah. of a sudden, what were there rumors that were going on, or how did it happen?
Well, it starts with like fans coming to training and just kind of like demanding answers because we know winning, players are not happy.
Mm-hmm.
The staff is trying to, you know, kind of keep everybody together, keep everybody grounded and mm-hmm. focused on, you know, each game. But you know,
so
like,
fans were showing up because there
yeah,
was in the news, things
yeah,
were leaking out in the news.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah. And
okay.
so it was kind of getting a little hectic, and then.
Yeah.
The news breaks that, you know, we just got relegated from League One,
mm-hmm.
and there's the news that, you know, we don't have enough money to stay in League Two because mm-hmm. there's no revenue, there hasn't been any, like substantial revenue coming in,
mm-hmm.
but then, you know,
so then first of all, was it like how big of a deal is it to get relegated from like League One to League Two?
It's kind of huge
because,
you know, we were like a mid-table team,
okay.
At best, mm-hmm. and so like a club like that, we rely a lot on TV money and
right.
and the bonuses and the perks that come to be in League One, and so to have that revenue cut off, that means you're getting rid of your best players who mm-hmm. could potentially go and play for better clubs than
okay.
you, and the only reason why you could retain these guys
yeah.
was because you could pay them enough to stay with you guys.
So then, as soon as the team gets relegated from League One to League Two, is the team already like looking to like sell players to
yes,
make some money?
Because you're gonna mm-hmm. need that money to stay in League Two
yeah.
or to stay there, and also like an example is like mm-hmm. you know, one of our best players, Alan Saint-Maximin, who plays with Nice now,
mm-hmm.
he was on loan from Monaco.
Okay,
so it's basically Monaco is either splitting
mm-hmm.
or has some sort of way to keep Alan happy at Bastia.
Sure.
Because Bastia really can't afford Alan's salary.
Okay.
And so the only reason why we get a player like that to play for us is the fact that we're playing League One.
Got it.
But then if we get relegated,
yeah.
Alan is gone.
Yeah,
he's going back to Monaco,
right.
and now he's playing at Nice.
Right. So you have a player that's like on loan,
yeah.
right? And he's like a high level player.
Yeah.
But let's say he's injured, or he's coming back from injury, or there's
yeah.
not enough playing time.
At
so
Monaco,
they'll loan him to another team,
yeah.
right? But the fact that you guys are still in the same league, he's happy.
He's happy to
and
be
maybe
there.
his original team, Nice, is still paying like a big
chunk
portion,
of his, yeah,
a big chunk of his salary, right?
Yeah.
But then if that team that he's on loan gets relegated, he's like, dude, I'm out of here, right?
Yeah,
like, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. And so we lose, like, I mean, I think we had like something like eight players on loan, and six
mm-hmm.
of them were starters at some point. And
okay.
so, like, you're losing your team, basically. And
okay.
so now you're depending on the guys who haven't played a lot, and
yeah.
the guys who you're not paying enough to stay, you know, or like you're paying, but
yeah.
like they're not necessarily your best guys, because these guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Alan is like maybe second or third of the bench at Monaco, but he's not happy there, so he comes to Brescia, so he could be a regular, you know. Like, you're losing a player like that of that quality,
yeah,
it just hurts your team, you know. Okay. And so, you know, it comes down to these guys leaving and the guys that you haven't played a lot,
right?
Like, no clubs have seen them, so there are not really any offers coming in. So how do you really sustain yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you haven't played these guys all year, so now you can't go out to a club and say, hey, I'm gonna sell X for mm-hmm. 2 million.
Right.
They'll be like, we haven't seen him all year, like, where has he been? And so at that point it became difficult, because now these players are gone for free because they weren't even ours. And
yeah.
And the guys who were placed at Bastia, like, it gets difficult even yeah. when you're trying to sell them and make some more money.
Mm-hmm. So then did you play a full second season in League 2 then?
No. So okay. we got relegated to League 2, and
yeah.
that season in League 2 was when they started looking into the books at Bastia, and okay. we couldn't.
There was all this crazy corruption going on or whatever. Yeah, money's gone, money's and then gone. You guys got punished and dropped to like seventh
Division
tier
seven.
Or what?
To Division 7. Yeah,
Division 7. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So then all of a sudden from, right, experience of coming out of college, playing in League 1,
yeah.
and then playing on a team. For how many people show up to these games? Like 15,000 or
yeah.
15,000, 16,000?
Yeah. It depends the stadium you play yeah. in. Like,
but
you
but your home stadium is what?
The home stadium was 15,000 to 20,000.
Okay, and yeah. it's decent crowds showing
decent
up.
Crowds.
Yeah, it's fun,
like,
right?
Consistent, yeah, yeah.
And so it's exciting, and all of a sudden you guys get relegated, so that's a big blow.
Yeah.
And then there's all these issues that come with getting relegated, and then yeah. on top of that, you guys got punished for whatever issues with money and corruption, so you guys got dropped to League, right, Division 7.
Yeah.
And then what's going on? This is all within a span of less than 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So what's going on with, like, calls to your family and to your agent? Are you, like, yeah. on the phone, like, you know, like, every day with agent?
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I mean, at that point, I was with Fabian Pivito. It's like, he was, like, I think he's still my Ecclesians agent, and mm-hmm. yeah, he's kind of a high-profile agent, so mm-hmm. there was not really, a, like, panic then, you know? It's like, now let's figure out where we're going to go next, and, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm still 20, you know, it's just been one season or two seasons of Bastia, and it's just only been, like, one, like, full season, and so okay. it's like, oh, yeah,
let's so just like, let's figure out where you're going to go.
Where your next okay. step is, and then, you know.
It just and then you went from there to where?
So I went from there, I kind of bounced around a lot in Europe, like, trying to figure out what the, you know, the best fit was, and yeah. there was, like, not really anything, like, that was, like, good enough, mm-hmm. and so Fabian and I kind of, we kind of parted our ways, and then I moved from Bastia signed in Veracruz, Mexico.
Okay, Liga MX.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then, yeah. So.
It's interesting, because there aren't that many guys that I know, you know, personally that have played in, you know, U.S. and then also, like, League One and League, you know, in Mexico, you know, in the Premier Division. Like, what do you think is the difference in styles between, like, those three leagues?
I think League One was a little more, like, a lot more direct, mm-hmm. and it has, like, the combination. I don't know if you've read, I was just reading this article mm-hmm. a couple of days ago, is how, I mean, everybody kind of knows that at this point in the soccer world, how mm-hmm. League One is kind of like the farmhouse for the EPL, because the yeah. EPL and League One has a lot of, like, similarities.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's physical,
very direct.
It's direct.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's like big, fast.
Okay.
You know,
fast, big, long balls, kind of. Yeah.
And just kind of
okay.
like, let's get to the point.
Just get
know?
To it. Okay.
Just get to it.
Okay.
And so that was kind of the biggest thing in League One. It was as technical as it was, mm-hmm. it was, the main focus wasn't on that. It was like, if you have a big, tall striker,
mm-hmm. get it to him. Feed him the ball.
Just feed him the ball
yeah.
and get
feed Zlatan and let
yeah,
him score, kind of thing.
Get the creative okay. guys around him, and then we figure it out, you know?
Okay.
And I think in Liga MX, it was go, 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 like, all technical. You know, like, I think our biggest player there, I mean, he was, like, 6'4", he's our center back, but, like, I think he was the only big guy. Like, okay. our best player was Keiko Villalba, who was, like, maybe 5'4".
Okay.
You know, it's, like, I think in the Latin Americas, it's just, like, super technical and it's all skill, but, like,
it's all skill and technical.
But saying that, it was, like, nonstop, like, counterattack.
Right.
I thought that
no
was
rest?
No rest.
In Liga MX?
In Liga MX. I think the first 2 weeks that I got there, mm-hmm. so I get on a Thursday night,
okay.
I check into the hotel, like, everything is all good. I show up on a Friday, and mm-hmm. they're running. I'm like, what's going on? Like, they play on a weekend.
Okay.
Like, running. I'm like,
so you're saying on a Friday instead of, like, you know,
like,
resting
out
before
here,
the game.
We'll do walkthroughs.
Yeah, yeah.
They are running. I'm like,
okay.
That's
right, right, and
cool.
then the game's on Saturday.
They play the game on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I think they tied that game.
Okay.
Whatever. Show up on Monday, first uh-huh. training session is like on the line. We just all run. Doesn't
right.
I don't touch.
Usually
the ball.
It's like game recovery,
yeah,
right? Yeah, day recovery
yeah,
day. Ease into it, right? And
nah.
it's usually like there's a you know easing into the beginning of the week after the game, right?
Yeah.
and then ramping it up a little bit, and then midweek, you know, real hard session, yeah. right? And then when you get closer to the game, kind of, right? Kinda there's none left. Nah. It's just like the whole entire time.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And so I get into training, my first training session on Monday, I don't touch the ball, I just run.
Oh, wow.
And for like 2 weeks straight.
It's like my high school soccer
two coach. 2 weeks straight, I'm just booking uh-huh. it. Just and running. So I call my agent, I'm like this is dude, not for like, me. What is yeah. going on? Like, I can't do this, I'm complaining. He's like, uh-huh. just be patient, you just, you know, just like, you don't want to be that guy right now. Like, yeah. you're just a new
jumping,
team.
Jumping, right?
Yeah, yeah, just like, make sure you're just doing whatever they're telling you to do, and don't okay. worry about it, it's going to come. And so I get put in my first scrimmage with them, and it's nonstop counter attack. Like, we get the ball, we go, we lose it, they're coming. Like, there's no like, all right, we got it now, let's possess, let's build mm-hmm. it now. And so like the first 20 minutes, I'm gassed. I'm like mm-hmm. literally grasping for air. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, holy mother, like mm-hmm. this is probably why they run so much, because there's no rest. Like mm-hmm. you have to be so fit to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And like, it was so easy to just sit in the stance and criticize players from like being gassed, because I wasn't there, I was like, he is tired. But then, like, being in that scrimmage that day, I was like, mm-hmm. I need to run more. Like, I get back to training the next day. I'm right. like, whatever you guys want me to do, I'm yeah. doing it. Because at that point, it's like, it's totally different.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Did you go the full game?
No, I got subbed at half.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I got to sub the new guy out, man. He can't hang, man. He's no, like, no, 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 he's like about to throw
no
up over
chance.
Here.
No chance. I mean, I pushed through about half. I was yeah. like, Sarah, like, right. I get it.
Yeah.
I just need to get fit.
Did you tell the coach, or the coach was just like?
No, I think I actually was supposed to play 45 minutes, so it just were. Worked
okay.
out. Like,
okay.
I was just
it worked
like,
out okay.
I was like, oh, I really wanted to go, but nah, I was done.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That's interesting, because like on TV, when you watch it, like Liga MX, it's yeah. not that readily apparent. You know, it's not that obvious that it's the pace is like that.
No, it's not.
You can see the technical aspect, and they do run, but you would not realize it's like that.
No.
Interesting.
No. Nobody keeps the ball. It's just go.
Really?
And, like, that's how you do it in training too. So, uh-huh. I think that was the biggest difference.
Okay.
Especially yeah.
So then, how did you make the transition from Liga MX to where you're at today now?
So
you're like, all right, I gotta get out of here.
No, it's crazy. No, I wanted to
too
stay.
Much, right?
No, I loved it.
You
I
did?
Loved every bit of it
in Mexico.
I mean, yeah,
how was the lifestyle compared to like France?
The lifestyle was amazing.
Okay.
They are really into the game.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. They are
that's
so
true.
They are such fanatics. It's
yeah, the fans.
We had
the
fans
support.
Training every single day.
Okay.
Like, I was just telling one of my teammates yesterday, John Ricayo. He plays with me at Galaxy 2 now, but he played at Tijuana.
Okay.
He played with the Cholos, and we were like kind of like sharing stories yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I was like telling him how one time, like, I mean, I think it was my maybe one of the first training sessions when I was there. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, training is done. I get in my car, I'm leaving, and as I pull towards the gate, I see like a little fan like run towards my window, mm-hmm. and I roll down my window to like say hi or whatever, and he sticks out like this like pad for me to sign. So I pick up the pen, I start signing, I look up like as I'm done,
mm-hmm.
and there's a mob like rushing towards the car, and
wow.
that was like maybe a Tuesday, Wednesday training session.
That's crazy.
It's like that's how passionate they are about football, and it's like I was telling him it's like one of the that was like. And then I'm like riding with my teammates. He's like, you should have never done that. Like, once you open up that window,
it's
game
over.
Over.
Okay.
And like teammates behind you, like honking, like just kind of messing with you.
Yeah.
But like once you open up your window, it's over. And like that's not a game day. That's training session. So like during game days, like it's impossible to get out of the parking lot. It doesn't matter win, lose, tie. Like these guys are like all behind the team.
So then France, it wasn't like that?
I mean, it was, but it was mm-hmm. different. I think like the Corsicans are passionate about winning so much that it really didn't matter. Like, it was like, give us anything you got.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we go out there and we gave everything that we got, they were like all for us, you know? But I think Mexico was just like a little bit of a shock to me, because Veracruz is not a big team in Mexico, and
right.
it wasn't, we weren't winning a lot of games or anything, but like, mm-hmm. it was still crazy.
So how is it like when you are going to like restaurants and, you know, nightlife in France? Are you like recognized? Are you getting, you know, are you going out with your teammates? You know, or compared to like Mexico, how was it?
I mean, on the island, yeah, in Bastia,
okay.
yeah, like everywhere you kind of went.
People
kind of
know you.
Our coaches also are like spies everywhere. Like if you went
he doesn't
out,
he doesn't want you out.
It depends when you went out. Like
okay.
if you're going out in a weekday, like I didn't go out that much at all.
Yeah.
Actually, even when like we won or anything, I had like a couple of close friends that I would go to your house, like their place for like
well,
dinner.
What was the rule? What was allowed and what wasn't allowed?
Well, like if we lost, you weren't supposed to go out. It's kind of like,
okay,
it's kinda
home,
like
right?
the unwritten
right.
rule. Like
right. so if you
go,
lose, like what do you go
like,
out partying
yeah,
for, right?
What are you
okay.
doing? Or
okay.
like if we have a midweek game, like we
yeah.
don't want to, you know, it's
yeah,
like even
be
being at a restaurant
too,
past like, you know, midnight or something, it's just kind of
okay.
like ridiculous, like mm-hmm. at 11. Yeah, but I mean, most of the people didn't really go out on the island because it was pretty small.
Okay.
And word travels fast. And these fans were like the same people who like worked at these restaurants. And, you know, it was a community, I think. That was the biggest thing in Basia. It was like such a small, tight-knit community that kind of like cheered for the club. And so they kind of held everybody accountable. I remember when I first got there, it took me a while to get my international license to like drive. Mm-hmm. And so I remember like going to the dealership and getting my car finally. And then I was so happy. I was like, I had so much stuff to do. I needed furniture for my place. I needed to go to grocery shopping. Like, so I was like doing rounds, like from store to store, getting stuff for my place. And I remember like getting that done. I get back to training the next day and everybody who saw me just started laughing. I was like, what's going on?
Okay.
So apparently my keeper's coach like saw me running around like everybody, like everywhere, like getting
it's
stuff.
It's a small,
like,
you can't do anything small, without, no, right? Yeah, yeah.
So he was like, he's like telling people that how happy I was to get my car. And I was like, he said I was driving around aimlessly just because I had my car then. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, I didn't know he saw me. And apparently like he saw me like do like the rounds like maybe four or five times. Right. You know, like that's how small the place was. And so I go out and, you know, party or like do something that you're not supposed to be doing as a professional.
It's gonna pop up.
It's gonna 100 people.
So then how was Mexico going out and, you know, nightlife and all that?
Mexico's a little different. Yeah. I remember I think it was after our first win, I went out with one of my teammates and I was supposed to go to this place and then we're gonna go out. And so I get to this place and he's like, alright, we're ready to leave. And then they're like two big guys get in the back of our car. I'm like, what's going on? Like, we had to go everywhere with security guards.
Oh, okay.
So that was one of the biggest differences.
Really? So every time you go out, you have to have security with you.
Have security in Mexico.
Just what's the main? Not to, is it for the fans or because you don't want to have issues with guys like trying to cause issues?
No,
you know, problems
most. With you. I mean, they told me these stories when I first moved there about like abductions, like they were for like ransoms and stuff.
Okay.
Like I never saw any, but one of my teammates actually had his mom abducted. So when I first got there, I met this kid, and then like for the next like week and a half, I didn't see him. So I was like, "Yo, where is he?" And they're like, "Oh, he's dealing with some family issues." And so he gets back, and he's like, "Yeah, so this is what happened." And apparently, it's happened a couple of times, but you know, luckily for me, it never happened. But we most of the time, when if we went out even to dinner or anything, we had to
some
security.
How was like the female fan base out there? Are they like, you know? I feel like. You know, did you have any girlfriends out there while you were there?
No? I did not have girlfriends out there.
Nothing
permanent? I just went there to get my career like restarted and back on track.
Now, that sounds like a very rehearsed answer,
no,
man.
No,
you have a girlfriend right now?
No.
Okay, so you're single.
I cook, I clean.
Yeah.
My mom told me it's terrible that I'm such a great cook because I'm never going to get married and she feels bad, but... I'm a dope cook.
Oh, really?
I'm a chef. They call me Chef Gustavo is my nickname.
So how long were you in Mexico before you came to this?
6 months.
6 months, okay. Yeah. And then now after Mexico, LA Galaxy 2 was the first team?
Yeah, so before I left for Mexico, I came to train with the guys just to get in shape and all that. And when I was there, one of the technical directors saw me at Jovan. And was like, we want you to stay. And I just told him, I can't, my ITC is already in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Kind of, I already have like, you know, a contract and everything planned with Veracruz in Mexico.
Okay.
And so he told me like, you know, the experiences he's known about in Mexico. And like, if anything happened and I wanted to come back, I should just give him a call. So we kind of started our relationship there and then, kind of when everything hit the fan in Mexico, he was my first phone
call.
What
hit the fan? What happened?
Well, a new coach came in and brought in 8 of his players, so 8 players had to go. Mm-hmm. So I
just found, like that, 8 players were
8
out.
8 players. I found it on Twitter on a Sunday morning.
Are you serious? On Twitter? Who's Twitter?
On Veracruz's Twitter.
On the team Twitter? Team account. Twitter. Saying what?
Like my name was part of the 8 players who had to go.
That word out.
Out.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Wow.
So, I called my agent
and said, hey, So they just canceled your contract or what?
Well, they had to like reimburse me and stuff, like kind of like, you know, so it had to be mutual. But at that point, I honestly just didn't want to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. They tried to have me in the draft to get me to a different team in Mexico.
Okay.
I had another option to go to Celaya, which is a second division team in Mexico. I was just like, everything here just kind of seems bizarre right now. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that the club couldn't even tell me that I was getting traded or, you know, I was, you know, all that stuff was just kind of like. Now, at that point, I didn't speak the language. I mean, I was just like, everything just seems so bizarre. Just, you know, I need some stability right now. I need to get my career on track. I don't And the next move that I had to do was just had the my next move just had to be like something that like something concrete, something that I could believe in, or just with somebody who like believed in me enough to like kind of stick their neck out for me. And so, you know, I just didn't want to do it.
Okay.
And so I got on the next flight the next day and kind of packed whatever I needed to pack, deal with my lease, and just, you know, moved on.
But so then you were already planning on calling LA Galaxy at that point?
Yeah, okay. At that point, that's going to be my next phone call. So
okay.
I got back, put in a call to Jovan, and he said, we'll have to have you. We don't have enough spot. We don't have any spots right now. But, you know, we'll have to have you on the second team, and, you know, you just got to give us what I saw when you were here, and we're going to figure out the next year. And so, you know,
that's what you're doing.
That's what I'm doing.
So when was this? When you came, when you signed, you know, with LA Galaxy 2, Los Dos, right?
Yeah. In December. Yeah.
December of 2017. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's like, basically just saying, hey, you know, we don't have a spot for you on the first team, right?
Yeah.
So we'll try to make room for you,
On the second team. So if it works out, we got you.
And okay. That's good. Yeah. So basically, you have the opportunity, right? But you just got to prove yourself, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and also, like, with him, it's, for me, especially in my career, I haven't really, like, come across anybody who, I mean, my agents did, and some coaches have. Like, one of my favorite coaches was my assistant coach at Bastia, an amazing coach. He absolutely, like, I adored him so much. He, like, you know, he helped me so much grow as a player and as an individual. He's always been there for me. And like, as a soccer player, you don't really find like any, like a lot of coaches that stick their neck out for you, or a lot of anybody in the business that actually like goes on a limb for you. Yeah. And so to have somebody who, I mean, Jovan saw me train once, and you know, it could have just been another player. Like, he doesn't need me. He brings in Zlatan Ibrahimovic like 6 months after, so he doesn't really need me. He could go out and get whoever he wants.
Right.
But like, after training session, he wanted to keep me here, and he wanted to, you know, see me come through the club, and you know, like, and so at that point, I was like, if, you know, anybody who is able to, like, you know, see a player and just kind of like give him the shot that he needed, and the fact that I was able to go to Mexico and try that out, and when it didn't work out, I put in a phone call to him, and he wanted to have me back and, you know, help me go through, you know, Galaxy 2 or whatever, and give me the opportunity to do that and be able to prove myself. It's just
this is
like,
this is the Los Dos coach?
No. So Jovan is the director.
What's his Jovan what?
I'm
trying to look him up.
He has like an interesting last name.
How do you spell it?
Right. I got you. I should know it. He probably can't say my last name either, so like, I'm never, I don't
know. He can't say yours?
Yeah, this
can't pronounce it properly. Hompong.
He tries though.
Okay, Jovan Karofsky. Okay. He's the technical director. Okay. So he's the technical director of the club.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Got it.
So like, yeah. It's hard to find people like that to, like, you know, who got your back, especially in the soccer world. And so the fact that he was able to be there for me, it's just kind of like, you know, whatever you want me to do, however you want me to do it, I, you know, I'm just gonna have to, like, you know, put my ego aside and just work my butt off to be able to prove to you and everybody else in the organization that I just deserve a chance to be out there. So,
do you think about? So right now you're in USL, right?
Yeah.
So, like, do you know the U.S. soccer landscape pretty well? Are you familiar with it, or have, you know what I mean, like, how there's been so much happening lately in the last few years with NASL, you know, USL,
well,
you know,
kinda
going
know,
from,
like,
third division to second,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Are you familiar with all that?
I know
you just
USL is, like, technically like the second division.
It is,
I know
the,
NASL
right?
was like,
it used to be the second division.
The second division,
yeah, but even before that, USL used to be third division, right?
Really?
But now it's currently second.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, like,
did NASL fold? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they're currently like in hiatus, you know, because they couldn't get enough teams, you know, because basically NASL was second division and they were like almost pretty much trying to compete with MLS.
Yeah.
And,
oh,
you know,
so that's what happened.
Yeah. So they're trying to compete with MLS, trying to, you know, get to, you know, Division One status.
Yeah.
And there was all these issues, you know, there's like the big boy on the block and they couldn't do it.
They're
so,
like,
they couldn't get enough teams. So they're almost folded. They haven't completely folded yet.
Yeah.
But during that time, MLS and USL, excuse me, came up with an agreement. And so, you know, obviously they have MLS teams that have, you know, their second division teams in USL. And so,
yeah,
that's where we are today. But the question I was gonna ask you is like, what do you think about it? Because I know, like, obviously being with Los Dos is huge, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you're there's a great opportunity, and you know what I mean? It's like LA Galaxy, you know, they're like one of the top team, you know, five championships in MLS in the history, accommodations, all of that, right?
Yeah.
But then when you play against other USL teams that don't have an MLS team, right? They have a bigger fan base, right? And they have huge, you know, some of them have huge crowds that show up to the games, right?
Yeah.
How does that affect you? Like, because you're playing at home and the accommodations are great, right? You're playing at StubHub, but then necessarily the fan base isn't quite there because everyone's all focused on the first division team.
Yeah.
But then if you go to, like, let's say, I don't know, like back
Sacramento.
In the day. Yeah, Sacramento, yeah, right? 20,000, yeah, right? Yeah. How does that affect you? Does it, you know what I mean? Does, like, that, like, bother, like,
does
you?
Does it bother me that I'm playing for Los Dos instead of Sacramento?
Not that you play, like, but the fact that you're, you know what I mean? Like, you're playing for Los Dos, but, like, there's this huge disparity in terms of, you know, the recognition and the acceptance and, right?
No, I think for me, it just pushes, I don't know, I think for me, it just pushes, you know, as a player, just you just want to not be in that situation. You just want to keep growing and be better.
Yeah.
Be better so you could be playing with Galaxy instead of Los Dos. I don't think anybody's looking at that as, like, oh, I'm playing with Los Dos and kind of that's it. Like, for me, like, if I'm playing Sacramento at Sacramento and they have 20,000 people and I'm playing Sacramento at home and I have 500 people, I'm not really bothered about
who's in the stand.
I think for some players, like, your standard kind of raises, but I'm a competitor in a way where I just, like, I compete with the next man next to me. So if I'm playing the number 10 and there's a number 6 defending me, I want to beat him every single time and dominate. Like, that's my job and that's what I want to do. I don't want the 6 to intercept all my balls, so I don't want the guy that I'm playing against to beat me. So at that point, like, for me, it's all mental.
Yeah.
I don't look in the stands. I don't count, you know, who's watching and who is not. It's just, for me, it's just like, it's me and the next man, honestly. Gotcha. And
but, you know, when you're going to some of these games, you know, like, you have that, right?
That
expectation, like, and kind of excitement, right? When, so, you, like, know there's going to be like 10,000 fans showing up, rowdy, right?
I totally see that. So, like, when we played Sacramento away.
You get up for it.
Yeah, you get up for it. I think everybody raises your level for that. And that was, like, maybe one of our best games we played this year. Everybody kind of lifted up your game, and, you know, the atmosphere is great, obviously.
Right.
I'm not saying that the atmosphere doesn't help with the game 100%.
Yeah.
But what I was trying to say is, like,
you're still a professional at
the end of the day. You're a professional, that's the bottom line. And, and it's, if you're playing in front of, you know, 500 fans or 2,000 or 200, or it really doesn't matter. It just comes to you getting finding a way to win games and. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting the job done. That's really matter. Even if it's an you know, intramural scrimmage, it really doesn't matter at that point. Just kind of, you just gotta get it done. But yeah, definitely raises the game. And so the advantage we get, especially, is like going on the road and playing against teams where they have like a bigger fan base. Yeah. Like we want to go there and shut them down. We want to go there and put in enough work where we could walk away with, you know, win or draw, a point away from home. And at that point, that's it. We really don't kind of focus on, you know, like, oh, we are home now. And it's, you know.
I see.
I mean, we do actually get decent fan base. There's really not.
There's just, you know, like, there's a big difference between the first team and the second team with, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So then how much interaction do you guys get with, like, the first team? Do you guys, like, practice against them or with them? And, you know,
we share the same gym. Okay. Our locker rooms are, like, right next to each other. We train. Some players get to train a couple times with the first team.
You guys
team.
Get
to
scrimmage?
So it's kind of different. So we do, but so, like, let's say, like, on a weekend, I don't get a lot of minutes, so I get less than 40 minutes that weekend.
Okay.
We kind of, like, and someone in the first team gets, like, not enough minutes and they need to stay fit. Like, we'll make them play a game on a Sunday or a Saturday if it's a midweek game.
Right.
So we still see each other, interact a lot. Like, today I was in the gym and, like, everybody kind of walked in after training. And so it's like, you know, we see each other a lot. We have the same tunnel. We do see each other a lot. But
is there a little bit of tension between the two teams at all?
No. Like, tension?
Maybe that's not the right word. Because, like, I'm thinking of, like, high school, right? Like, if you're on JV and you see... Maybe that's not the best one.
No, because everybody's a pro. It's just basically, like, what you're dealing with. So, like, there are 7 international spots for international players. So if you're in the first team, that doesn't mean you're better than anybody in the second team. It's like, it's not the right time to be there. And it's you're not needed at that moment by the coach. And so if your chance comes, you just arise to it.
7 international spots for the entire... For 1 and 2 years.
No. For then? Just one. And just so one. If you're in the two... I mean, the twos have, like... We have, like, a lot of international players in the two. So basically, you're just kind of waiting around and working hard and waiting for your chance to open up.
Okay.
And so just, like, Like, I don't see a freshman player and say he's better than me. Like, not at all. Like,
you don't think that. But what I'm saying is, like, let's say, for example, LA Galaxy, right? Yeah. If they're, like, killing it, right? And they're dominating, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're, right? Because right now they're, what, like, fourth, fifth place, right? Yeah. Let's say they're in first place and they're dominating, right? That I would feel like, oh, man, that I have less chance of breaking into that, right? Versus, you know what I mean? If they're kind of struggling, yeah, I'm like, hey, man, they're a little weak on the midfield, you know? Nah. And I'm like, you know?
I think it's actually different. Okay. On the contrary, so this is how this works, So, like, right now, if, like, let's say they were balling now and they're winning every game, they're blowing everybody out, if Ziggy Schmidt sits down and goes, all right, so we're killing everybody by, like, 3-0, like, why not throw Efrain in the midfield and have the 15-year-old go have a good time? Mm-hmm. Why not, you know, have, like, X and Y up, like, you know? But, like, if they're not doing well and they're struggling, there's not going to be a lot of chances coming in for young
ones. I'm talking more like next year.
Next year.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there's room, you know what I mean? If the team's not struggling, they got to make some changes. They got to shuffle some players in and out.
I think, like, even PSG promotes from within, if you're doing well with the second team and you're doing well, you know, you're doing everything right, I think your chance, your chance is going to come. It's just, you're right. I mean, if they're doing well and, like, they're playing super well and next year, they're not going to really need, like, a lot of reinforcement. But if they're struggling, they're going to want to shake stuff up. But, like, as a pro, you just kind of, like, and it's the same organization. I want them to do well. I want them to play well. I want them to win championships. I want to be part of that, like, winning culture. And so, really, I don't, like, look at it as a, you know, like, oh, if they don't do well, that means I get a chance. I'm like, I want them to win, and I want to do well enough that they want me part of that organization where, you know, I'm bringing something to the table. I don't want to go there and fix and solve problems. Like, if that's what I'm needed for, 100%. But if, you know, like, they're doing well and they need, like, help in certain areas and they think I could help, like, yes, please. But I don't think most of the players in the Los Dos organization or, like, in the team think that way. Like, I'm glad you're losing. I get a chance.
What are your thoughts of Zlatan?
He's an amazing player. He's a popular to contrary belief. I think he's actually, contrary to popular belief, I think he's actually a pretty, like, humble human being, and he's a cool dude. I remember, like, one of my first training sessions with him was, like speaking Cree to me, which is, like, our local dialect, because he's played all over the world, and he has, like, he's had a lot of Ghanaian teammates in the past. And I was like, wait, what? You speak Cree? And it's like, like, I've played with, like, Suleiman Terry and all these guys, so, like, they would, like, you know, throw some words at me from time to time. It's like, I'm, like, a 21-year-old player, like, nobody knows who I am, like, he doesn't have to have that conversation.
Take that time out to kind of know.
He doesn't have to do that. And, you know, and so, like, you know, that was my first, like, ever one of my first ever conversations with him. And, like, he would see me in the gym and say, hi, he doesn't have to come do that. Like, you know? But, like, people see him as, like, this, like, arrogant, like, you know. But I think there's a fine line between arrogance and confidence. And I think he's, like, solidified the fact, he's solidified how to be so confident. It's seen by arrogance, by, like, the inferior, I think.
Okay.
So, like, it's
what do you think about some of, like, the criticism about his game now, right, with MLS and just, I mean, obviously he's doing well, right, he's scoring goals, but maybe, like, you know, he gets down a lot on his teammates, you know what I'm saying, like, body language, you know, like, he's not a huge mobile kind of running active player at this stage of his career, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, he needs delivery at the right time in the right moment, and if he doesn't get it, he's just, like, constantly, you know what I mean? Like, there's that criticism. What do you think about it? Have you seen the games and you watch him watch his style? Well, what do you think?
I think as
is he, like, getting pissed off because everyone's not at his level or what? That's what it seems like, his body language, right?
Well, yeah. That too, but he just demands a lot more from his teammates, which is totally fair.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes down to the quality we have on the field, So, like, if he's doing that means he expects more from you, not because he doesn't think you're good enough. He just expects more because he knows you could do more. Like, I've seen him in training sessions where he's, you know, criticized me for doing stuff that I know I could do better. Like, he passed me the ball and said touchback, and I mess up, or I give a pass, but, like, he expects me to be able to, like, you know, thread through the needle and play like a better ball.
Okay.
Like, that is not him saying, like, oh my god, like, who is this kid? It's like, I know you could do it. I've seen you do it. So why, like, what's going on? And half of the time, like, he gets frustrated because you're right. He is
expecting,
like,
higher quality.
He's expecting higher quality, and he's expecting people to deliver because he knows we can, and he knows his team can. And so for him, I feel mm-hmm. like it just gets a little harder because, yeah. you know, he's played with some, like, world-class players, and it just gets a little frustrating. But
right.
I don't think it's necessarily negative because as pros, you just got to, like, be able to take that by, you know, take it in strides and just kind of, mm-hmm. you know, keep digging away. I don't think anybody on that team is just kind of like Zlatan this or Zlatan that mm-hmm. is like, oh, I messed up. Because, like, half of the time, these, like, whoever he's getting mad at or, mm-hmm. like, getting frustrated about knows what, you know, what they need to do right. It's not really anything they need coaching on. It's yeah. like, it's execution. And right. sometimes it just comes with a lack of concentration mm-hmm. or fatigue or something. But he just expects. And you're right. He's also in the latter part of his career now. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't keep chasing idle balls.
Yeah.
If you're
yeah.
going to ping a ball into space for him,
right.
make sure you're putting it where he needs to be and yeah. where he could get them the ball. So
right.
I think, like, as a player, you know, I think the players see it differently than anybody sitting in the stands. And
right. So the players kind of understand. I think they're not taking it personally or getting upset. Personal
at all. And after the game, if you see him in the locker room, mm-hmm. like, you know, the way he interacts with them and, like, tries to, you know, the way he's around his teammates, so mm-hmm. you wouldn't understand as a teammate right. compared to, you know, because I think the general public, we don't necessarily see that. And so it gets hard to mm-hmm. to be, you know, neutral about how we see it firsthand on the field.
I yeah. got you. So what do you think about being here in LA and the soccer culture now with LAFC adding additional excitement and competition yeah. and rivalry, right? We just had the MLS rivalry week, right?
Yeah.
Tied, right? Which I predicted. I thought it was going to be a tie.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a tie. Just the way it was going to balance out. Yeah. I didn't know the exact score, but I thought it'd be a tie. You know, what do you think about the whole atmosphere in LA in general?
I think it's great for LA, honestly. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, we got the Clippers, we got the Lakers, and mm-hmm. you know, it's there. And we got the Galaxy, and we got LAFC, and it's kind of like the old heads and the new kids in the block, and yep. it's just kind of added a lot of more excitement in the mm-hmm. like if football in the US is gonna grow, and I think mm-hmm. it keeps growing, and I think LA really needed that, and I think the game in the US really needed that too, because LA is kind of the hub, and right. everything kind of like.
Yeah.
It gets hyped up out here,
yeah.
and then it kind of like travels. And so LA having two soccer teams where, you know, you could just really pick and choose where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Do the players like it, like inside the locker room?
Yeah, they like it?
They don't get offended or think that, like it's like the upstart club LA Galaxy has the legacy and all that, you know,
I just,
since 96, yeah, you know, kind of thing?
I think it gets everybody kind of gassed, you know, okay. It's like we're gonna go out there and kind of just show them who is there. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the mentality, and if I was out there, that would be my mentality. It's like mm-hmm. I play for one of the most prestigious clubs in the US, mm-hmm. and if I'm playing against a new club that just came in, I want to go show that you know, like that royalty mm-hmm. that comes with, you know, wearing a jersey and having a badge on your chest. It's just kind of mm-hmm. like that's really it. I mean, I think that's what it goes through their heads every time they take the field, because like Galaxy is known to be, you know, that guy.
Yeah.
And so it's every time they step out, it's kind of like we kind of go out and try and dominate. And so that's, I feel like that's having LAFC only just enhances the, you know, the hype around soccer in the US and mm-hmm. the growth that we kind of really need right now.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
no negativity.
No negativity. LAFC. All right. Yeah. All right. What about, you know, kind of wrapping up? How has it been in LA? You know, where are you living right now?
I live in Carson.
You live in Carson?
2 minutes from the step up, so it's pretty convenient.
So you're right there. You live with other teammates?
I live with a couple of teammates.
Okay. And what do you guys do to kind of let off steam and all that? Where do you guys hang out at?
Right now there's a Fortnite hype going on.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Doesn't that keep you guys up all night long? Right?
No.
The video game?
If you play late, that's when the pros are up. So you got to play when the noobs are up.
Okay.
I don't play that much. I used to play FIFA a ton, mm-hmm. But I don't game that much. I go out, I hang out, I go to the beach, I go mm-hmm. I go eat. I like to see LA. I've lived in Santa Barbara for the longest time, but I've never actually lived in LA. I've like been to LA and like hang out in LA with friends, but this is the first time like living here, so I'm just kind of like exploring. And with my track record, three clubs in 2 years, I've learned to kind of start enjoying, like, you know, okay. I lived in Bastia, where it was like a 45-minute ferry to Italy, and I never went because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought, you know,
too focused, you had time.
And
right?
Also, I was like, I have 3 years here. I'll figure it out. I'll figure a way to get there. Mm-hmm. I saw the ferry leave every morning, come back like every night, and I never did it. And so, like mm-hmm. right now, I'm just starting like you know, going out and enjoying, you know, the moment a lot more than kind of like, just like, oh, I'll do it later, you know. Yeah. Like Fortnite is always going to be there, so you know.
Yeah, so the guys are gamers then, huh?
And most of the guys are gamers. Okay. They go out, a bunch of them live in like Hermosa, Redondo, okay. Long Beach, so they go out, they're kind of beach people.
Okay. Sharkies? Have you ever get these guys?
Heard Sharkies, never been.
You haven't been there?
Never been to Sharkies.
Yeah, it's okay. You can avoid it.
Yeah?
You can avoid it. It's okay. I'm sure you'll be real popular if you go, though. I'm sure you guys will have a good time.
But
you guys all hang out together as like teammates for the most part?
Yeah, roommates? Roommates, obviously, but yeah. I'm actually like meeting a couple of teammates after for like dinner and stuff, like in Hermosa. So we get along pretty well.
Crew?
Yeah, we're a pretty tight crew. I just had like lunch with Iman Obuachi before I came. Mm. So it's like, you know, like first team, second team really doesn't matter. It's you know, so it's kind of a big, giant family. Yeah.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
All right, we wish you the best of luck. Any last words to your supporters out there?
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. You know, just live your best life. That's basically it, you know, because you never know.
Never know, right?
You never
exactly.
know.
Man speaks from experience, right? I appreciate you joining us here on the Herb's Pitch Podcast, The Beautiful Game of Life. And we'll see you out there.
All right, thank you.